Lovell, and if you haven't heard, Brother Jerry Dean did pass away. Was it Monday, Tuesday? So services tomorrow. Probably more announcements to follow. I've got a lot of good Bible students here. Just let's start off with some open-ended questions. If I were going to read about, you're going to read about David, to which Old Testament books would you turn, or could you turn? Samuel, which one, first or second? Loaded question. You can turn to either. Find him in either first and second Samuel. That contains lots about him. What other books? Psalms. About how many of the Psalms are attributed to his pen? Just remember about half the book. About half the book can be attributed to him. So, prolific writer there. You find a lot of the snapshots of what he was feeling at different times in the Psalms. We could go to some other books, right? We can go to Kings and then some in Chronicles and find out there as well. Kind of overlapping view of what we see in Samuel. So I wanted to go back to, well, before we do that, let's find some of the different relationships or positions in which we find David in the Scripture. You know, if you were talking about me, I serve as a father, as a husband, as a teacher, as a preacher. If you were talking about David, what different situations do we find him in? Starting off, we see him as a shepherd. Lots of right answers for this one. Just call them out. Man of war, warrior. A musician. A harpist, right? And a writer of songs as well.
King.
Fugitive. Man after God's own heart. Probably the most famous name for him. God-given. And what a great compliment anyone get. I don't know of a higher compliment that could be paid than to just say he's a man after God's own heart. And typically, that's what we say about David.
He was a sinner.
He was in that big club of which we're all members. What a stellar account it would be of him if he hadn't sinned the way he did. But you know how the Bible is. It tells it very plain. And so it lists his faults, just as it lists his great accomplishments.
He was a builder. He built a lot of things. But that was not going to be the temple. He accumulated everything.
Right.
Before Solomon built the temple.
He purposed to build the temple, but God told him, no, your son's going to build it. So if you were to measure the importance of a man, spiritually speaking, by the number of words devoted to him in the Bible, wouldn't David rank as a very important man? I don't know. Can you think of anyone who has more words devoted to them in the Old Testament than David? Maybe if you count all the books that Moses authored.
You're talking about earthly, I would say.
Earthly. Yeah, this is a way to.
You know, so many prophets point to Christ.
Yeah. In the Old Testament. Yeah, that's right. So, well, it's in David's period as being an exile, being considered by many to be an outlaw, that we pick him up in 1 Samuel chapter 25. And that's where we're going to spend the rest of our time this evening. For you in 1 Samuel chapter 25. The chapter begins with one verse that says, "Then Samuel died, and the Israelites gathered together and lamented for him, and buried him at his home in Ramah. And David arose and went down to the wilderness of Paran." This is the time in his life when, after slaying Goliath, after marrying a princess, after becoming a prince, after doing all that he could to calm Saul in his troubled period, which he was able to effectively with his music early on, but then after a while, Saul became so enraged and so bitter toward him that there was nothing he could do. And finally, with Jonathan's help, he's just just figures out the best thing he can do is flee. And so off he goes, and he's wandering, and he's got a band of men with him at this point. Well, we see him then come into contact with two other folks that we want to really focus in this chapter as well. They're introduced here. There's not much about them before. There's a little bit about one of them after. But these two just come onto the scene, and it's interesting to watch the interaction between them. Let me read for you verses 2 through 9 of 1 Samuel 25. Now there was a man in Maon whose business was in Carmel, and the man was very rich. He had 3,000 sheep and 1,000 goats, and he was shearing his sheep in Carmel. The name of the man was Nabal, and the name of his wife, Abigail. She was a woman of good understanding and beautiful appearance. But the man was harsh and evil in his doings. He was of the house of Caleb. When David heard in the wilderness that Nabal was shearing his sheep, David sent 10 young men, and David said to the young men, "Go up to Carmel, go to Nabal, greet him in my name, and thus you shall say to him who lives in prosperity, peace be to you, peace to your house, peace to all that you have. Now I've heard that you have shearers. Your shepherds were with us. We did not hurt them, nor was there anything missing from them all the while they were in Carmel. Ask your young men, and they will tell you. Therefore, let my young men find favor in your sight, for we come on a feast day. Please give whatever comes to your hand to your servants and to your son David." So when David's young men came, they spoke to Nabal according to all these words in the name of David, and they waited. Well, we're introduced to these two characters. And when we're introduced to the woman, Abigail, we have a kind of an introduction that reminds us of some of the really wonderful women of old, Sarah, being a woman who's both beautiful and of good understanding. But there's no good words for her husband. It's just pretty awful what they say about him. It says that in one of the versions, and I think it's the King James Version, it says that he was a churlish man. C-H-U-R-L-I-S-H, churlish. A word real full of meaning, but we don't know what it is because we never use it anymore, you know. But it's defined pretty well in the text there. For I was reading from the New King James Version. It says he's harsh and evil in all his doings. Do you know anyone like Nabal? A man who's very rich, a man who's got a trophy wife, you might say, but is harsh and evil in all his doings. He didn't get where he is because he's a just man and a servant of other people. Rather, he's just looking for cutting a deal or taking advantage or being harsh, being evil in all that he's done. Don't answer that question. I want to know who it is, if you know anybody like that. A lot of people do. Do you know somebody like Abigail? A woman of good understanding. Do you know anybody that reminds you of David? So, or if I was thinking of that, thinking a couple of people in my life that come pretty close to David, without the sin part, you know. And what a great... a great thing to say of someone that they're like David. He's just a great example. Well, you could read on in a couple of verses and see that what David had done in the wilderness for Nabal's shepherds, by the words of Nabal's own servants, he had been a wall around them. He had in no way tried to take advantage of them. He hadn't tried to put himself, to take of the flock or berate them in any way. Even as David's in exile, as Saul's seeking to kill him, I think David still sees himself as a servant of the Lord. And as the Lord's servant, it's his duty to protect those who come into his fellowship, those who come around him. He sees it as his responsibility to be upright, to be honest, to be fair, and to protect them. And that's exactly what he did for the shepherds. So, it wasn't wrong of him to expect something in return for that. Even though the service was offered without Nabal's consultation or approval or anything like that, David had rendered him a service. And so, even if David had just come upon Nabal and asked for some gift for himself and his servants, he wouldn't have been out of line, and it would have been within the customs and the expectations of any Jew to extend something to another Jew who was in need of food like that. So David is technically asking for a gift. You know, whatever you have, just give to us, that'd be great. But he's really asking for something a little more that's been earned to a degree. How do you think Nabal responds? Have you looked at it? Do you know how he responds? Remember, we said he's a harsh and evil man. Let's see what he says. In verses 10 through 12, Nabal answered David's servants and said, "Who is David? And who is the son of Jesse? There are many servants nowadays who break away each one from his master. Shall I then take my bread and my water and my meat that I have killed for my shearers and give it to men when I do not know where they are from?" So David's young men turned on their heels and went back. And they came and told him all these words. Now you could also read ahead and see that what he had done in the latter part of verse 14, as the words, this response of Nabal is retold by one of Nabal's servants, he reviled them. What does it mean to revile someone? Well, go to a pro ball game, and usually any comment directed toward the umpire is reviling, okay? When you talk about somebody's mother, and you're not saying something nice, okay? When you're casting all sorts of insults, and when you're just berating someone, that was, in addition to what the formal response was, that's what Nabal did. What do you think about his response? Did it in any way come from a lack? You know, he wasn't able to give any gift to David's party. Not at all. He had all these of the flocks. He had the sheep and the goats, and he came when they were shearing the sheep. That's normally not in. Just before a feast day when there will be slaughtering. So there's all sorts of stuff available. Nabal could have done this, but he didn't do it.
His answer was very short-sighted. He just didn't think it through.
He didn't think it through, did he? He didn't endeavor to research, you know, who is David. He just kind of throws it out and dismisses it very quickly. So he might have had some foreknowledge of David and know a little bit about him. Bob?
He was just being consistent in his life, the way he dealt with other people.
He's dealing in this situation as he's dealt in the others. That's right. Well, Ms. Dorf.
But I'm understanding that he was a Jew because he was the son of Caleb, the family of Caleb.
I'm understanding he is as well. That's right. So, really,
he should have done something for him.
Yeah, I mean, he should have had some sort of sense of camaraderie with David, or just, you know, being a Jew, he should have acted differently just being a Jew. We're put in mind of Abraham entertaining strangers coming by, and what does he do? He insists that they sit there, that he goes and he kills the fatted calf, and he just for a situation like this, and he provides, and he's quick to extend his hospitality. Nabal is just as quick or quicker to deny any hospitality, and even when there's much more basis upon which this gift would be given. Well, all right. How do you think David's going to react to this? Have you read that part? Do you know what he does? In verse 13, David said to his men, "Every man gird on his sword." So every man girded on his sword. David also girded on his sword. And about 400 men went with David, and 200 stayed with the supplies. 400 men with swords coming after Nabal. That's David's response. Now, is he justified in this? Would God have approved of David just girding on his sword and going to take care of the scoundrel? Well, think about that. In verse 14, one of the young men told Abigail, Nabal's wife, saying, "Look, David sent messengers from the wilderness to greet our master, and he reviled them. But the men were very good to us, and we were not hurt, nor did we miss anything as long as we accompanied them when we were in the fields. They were a wall to us, both night by night and day, all the time we were with them keeping the sheep. Now therefore, know and consider what you will do, for harm is determined against our master, against all his household, for he's such a scoundrel that one cannot speak to him." This was a very observant servant to bring this matter to Abigail's attention. He knew full well what was going to happen. And of course, when it says that the harm is going to come upon Nabal and his household, well, that's going to affect Abigail too. She's part of that household, certainly the children. Going to be in question. If there were, it really doesn't mention whether there were children. In verse 18, Abigail made haste and took 200 loaves of bread, 2 skins of wine, 5 sheep already dressed, 5 sheaves of roasted grain, 100 clusters of raisins, and 200 cakes of figs, and loaded them on donkeys. And she said to her servants, "Go on before me. See, I'm coming after you." But she did not tell her husband Nabal. So it was, she rode on the donkey, that she went down under cover of the hill, and there were David and all his men coming down toward her, and she met them. Think for a moment about the position that this woman finds herself in. She somehow, and do you ever wonder, how she got hooked up with a guy like Nabal in the first place? If she's so pretty and there's such good understanding, how'd they ever get hooked up? Is this an arranged marriage or what, you know? But she's got this husband who, through his churlish ways, has set in motion something that's going to bring terrible destruction upon her house. And here she comes out to meet this man that actually these 400 armed men. And she stands there alone. No one to protect her. Certainly no one is going to be able to overcome 400 armed men. She's taking the situation into her own hands. I just imagine, I can't even imagine what kind of courage it would have taken for her to go and to do such a thing. And it's been said that all the women in the Bible are remarkable. And that's true. The Bible generally concentrates on the males. And when a woman is mentioned, it's for some very interesting reason. There's something very important that's associated with that woman if she's in there. And if there's a whole chapter talking about her, well, that's pretty amazing. But here's this amazing woman, Abigail, going to meet 400 armed men. Just imagine that. Well, in verse 21, a little clarification. We didn't hear this before, but we get it now in the narrative. David had said, "Surely in vain I've protected all that this fellow has in the wilderness, so that nothing was missed of all that belonged to him. He's repaid me evil for good. May God do so and more also to the enemies of David, if I leave one male of all who belong to him by morning light." This was the vow. We learned earlier David said, "Put your sword on." This is what he had also said at that time. "So help me, I'm not going to leave one male in his household alive. That was the intent that he had in mind as Abigail rides out to meet him. Now, in verse 23, listen to this. Listen to what Abigail does. When Abigail saw David, she hastened to dismount from the donkey, fell on her face before David, and bowed down to the ground. She fell at his feet and said, "On me, Lord, on me, my Lord, on me let this iniquity be. And please let your maidservant speak in your ears and hear the words of your maidservant. Please let not my Lord regard this scoundrel Nabal, for as his name is, so is he. Nabal is his name, and folly is with him. But I, your maidservant, did not see the young men of my Lord whom you sent. Now therefore, my Lord, as the Lord lives and as your soul lives, since the Lord has held you back from coming to bloodshed and from avenging yourself with your own hand, now then, let your enemies and those who seek harm for my Lord be as Nabal. And now this present which your maidservant has brought to my Lord, let it be given to the young men who follow my Lord. Please forgive the trespass of your maidservant. For the Lord will certainly make for my Lord an enduring house, because my Lord fights the battles of the Lord, and evil is not found in you throughout your days. Yet a man has risen to pursue you and seek your life, but the life of my Lord shall be bound in the bundle of the living with the Lord your God. And the lives of your enemies he shall sling out as from the pocket of a sling. And it shall come to pass, when the Lord has done for my Lord according to all the good that he has spoken concerning you, and has appointed you ruler over Israel, that this will be no grief to you, nor offense of heart to my Lord, either that you have shed blood without cause, or that my Lord has avenged himself. But when the Lord has dealt well with my Lord, then remember your maidservant." Some people have something to say, and it's really wonderful when they can also say it well. And that's exactly what she did. What are some of the points now, in just reviewing, what are some of the points in Abigail's argument for David to calm down?
Don't get riled up over this worthless man, is one thing she said.
Yeah, he's really not worth your time. Don't get riled up about it. Yeah, talk about long-term thinking. Nabal wasn't thinking in the long term. Abigail is. And she's looking way down the road. And she says, you know, there's going to be a day when you're going to look back on this. You don't have to look back on this as something that you regret.
She says that God will sling up your enemies.
Says, you know, God has stopped you thus far from avenging yourself. Remember in the New Testament, Romans chapter 12, don't avenge yourself. Vengeance is mine. I will repay, says the Lord. And she's confident that the Lord will repay his enemies. You don't have to do this yourself. God's going to take care of it. What else does she say? Isn't it interesting how much she knows about David and the prophecies about him and his current situation and where he's going to be down the road? She knows all of this, and that makes Nabal's claim, who is David, who's the son of Jesse, probably saying that he was just dismissing. He knew a lot more than he was letting on about this fellow. I don't know how his wife could have known so much. She has a great knowledge of him. Do you see a day of her faith coming through here? Isn't she very confident that the Lord's on your side, the Lord's going to take care of all of this, and she's got a very real faith as she comes to him here. Well, 32, how do you think David's going to react to this? Remember what it said about Nabal? You can't talk to him. You know how he is, you can't talk to him. Well, you know how David is. You can't talk to David. Verse 32, David said to Abigail, "Blessed be the Lord God of Israel who sent you this day to meet me. And blessed is your advice, and blessed are you, because you have kept me this day from coming to bloodshed and from avenging myself with mine own hand. For indeed, as the Lord of Israel lives, who has kept me back from hurting you, unless you had hastened and come to meet me, surely by morning light, no males would have been left to Nabal." So David received from her hand what she had brought him, and he said to her, "Go up in peace to your house. See, I have heeded your voice and respected your person." Then Abigail went to Nabal, and there he was, holding a feast in his house, like the feast of a king. Nabal's heart was merry within him, for he was very drunk. Therefore she told him nothing, little or much, until morning light. So it was in the morning, when the wine had gone from Nabal, and his wife had told him these things, that his heart died within him, and he became like a stone. And then it happened after about 10 days that the Lord struck Nabal, and he died. So when David heard that Nabal was dead, he said, "Blessed be the Lord who has pleaded the cause of my reproach from the hand of Nabal and has kept his servant from evil. For the Lord has returned the wickedness of Nabal on his own head." And David sent and proposed to Abigail to take her as his wife. When the servants of David had come to Abigail, Carmel, they spoke to her, saying, "David sent us to you to ask you to become his wife." And she arose, bowed her face to the earth, and said, "Here is your maidservant, a servant to wash the feet of the servants of my lord." So Abigail rose in haste and rode on the donkey, attended by 5 of her maidens, and she followed the messengers of David and became his wife. The last 2 verses talk a little just bookkeeping things about some other relationships there. David says that if this woman had not come to him at this time, he surely would have done something to be regretted. He would have avenged himself with his own hand. He would have shed innocent blood. And he would have been guilty of that. He says, "Blessed are you for coming. Blessed are your words. And blessed be God for sending you to me." She was an instrument of God as well. As David was an instrument of God in the wilderness around the shepherds to protect them, Abigail's an instrument of God to keep David from doing a terrible thing. Well, how did Nabal react to the news when he finally sobered up in the morning? She told him, what happened? When I was working for Corning, I had a number of fellows that ran machines, and I was responsible for supervising them. Got a call one time, and one of them had a heart attack. I went to visit him in the hospital, and he said that it was a morning that he had gotten up, and he had 3 cups of coffee and about 8 cigarettes, and he said it felt like a piano was just sitting on his chest all of a sudden. That's what he described what happened to him. And when I went to visit him, he was very pale, very grayish, and it was about a week later that he died from that. He had had a massive heart attack and was not able to recover from it. And it just sounds so similar to what happened to Nabal, especially when it says here that his heart died within him. It sure does sound like a heart attack. Yeah?
Also, there's a quote about one of them says maybe he had a stroke and became paralyzed.
Yeah, some of the different ones do say stroke. And so stroke or heart attack sounds to be more like a heart attack, but I don't know that it matters much. This thing comes upon him. It sounds like a type A personality, doesn't it? He just gets so upset. Can you explain it any other way? His wife says, "Well, you know, I took all the stuff out to maybe like you didn't and wouldn't." And he just, and that's it. He just turns pale and he's done. And 10 days later, he's no more. Now, David looks back on this and he says, this was God's work. God did this. God struck this man and took him out of the way. By the way, that makes his wife available. And I think I'm going to do something about that. And so he does. And he starts building his harem even then. Pretty amazing. But well, that's the text. And that's the first pass at this. Now, I wonder if there might be some questions of yours or some comments that just came to mind while we were talking about it that you'd like to share with us. Gary?
I think we need to keep in mind the whole thing. David having 600 men, and she just happened to have 200 loaves of bread and all five sheep already done for a festive day, which was the time of the shearing. Yet there was still enough left after she took all that for Nabal to have the feast day himself. So the amount of people who were there, if they were preparing that, must have been into the hundreds of men already there to do that shearing of the sheep. So I think we need to keep in mind how large everything was.
The very large scale here.
That also shows the richness of the goods that Nabal and Abigail had.
Yeah, very, very well. Yes. Didn't Jesus say in the Sermon on the Mount that we ought to be reconciled to a brother quick,
yes,
soon? And the sooner the better. And so here she is proactively doing that, not waiting to see how it's going to play out, but just saying, I know enough to go do something. And she does something great. Mickey?
I'm amazed at the humility which she shows in verse 41. She arose and bowed with her face to the ground and said, "Behold, your maidservant is a maid to wash the feet of my Lord's servants."
She doesn't say to wash my Lord's feet. She says she's ready to wash the feet of the Lord's servants. There is hardly anything more humble than that.
Yeah. She was a rich woman, really, in comparison. Not to the king, but I mean, grew up with every kind of wealth.
Yeah. Look at what it said about Nabal and that feast that he gave. He was giving the feast to the king. He had self-appointed, he appointed himself king, or at least the style of a king, to honor himself. And what does his wife do? She humbles herself. Instead, here's the fool lifting himself up, and here's the wise woman with understanding and beauty and all those things, riches. She's humbling herself. It's a stark contrast there between the two, but very notable. Dave?
She's clearly made out to be a righteous woman in the Bible. But I find verse 25 very interesting, where she says, "Please do not let my Lord pay attention to this worthless man, Nabal, and Polly is with him." I don't really know of another Bible passage where a righteous woman downsize her husband like that.
Well, there was nothing incorrect about what she said. She was factual in this, and she was just really calling it as she saw it. And I think it was the time to do that. She said that he was a scoundrel, and she was right. Eddie?
Yeah, it's not like she walked around with him the second day. There was a situation here where she had to go ahead this is what she had to do. She had to show somebody, "Look, I know exactly what's going on here. I am." And David got her sized up just right. Extremely honorable woman. I'm sure she was an extremely honorable wife for Nabal. was her role. But now, really, what he's done is kind of put him out. She's got to make a choice.
And shame on Nabal for putting her in this position.
Exactly.
For it seems like she would have rather just be the honorable wife that she should be. But because of his actions, she's no longer in a position where she can please both her husband's will and her God's will. She's got to choose. And if a wife is ever put in a position like that, it's the fault of the husband. For God's never going to ask her to do anything wrong.
Yeah.
And so her husband puts her in this situation of having to choose. And we get the impression that she would have been, you know, in subjection and submission to him when she could. But in this situation, she could. She was right in, you know, sizing up that way.
It seems a little strange that he had an opportunity to give to some people that were in need, but yet when he refused them, he turns and gives a party to the people of the town, which I guess would pay homage to him. But he could have just as easily invited them to that big party.
Sure. Good point. And it gives us more understanding of what it means by his being harsh and evil in his doing. So he just really had to go out of his way to keep food from these people on this day.
My wife's Bible's commentary says something about God gives us the opportunity to give from our abundance, and he expects us to do that to people in need. And here Nabal had a chance to do that. He did not do that. God is angry with us when we don't give out of what he gives to us.
Yeah.
You know, there may very well have been lawless men, like Nabal suggests, who were leaving their masters and running them up around the neighborhood or whatever. But the interesting thing about Nabal is he automatically puts the worst possible interpretation on this. And of course, it's because he really doesn't want to help the guy or do anything for David. But the point is, he thinks absolutely the worst possible thing and then acts on that basis.
Yeah, the New Testament word that describes that is malignity. To ascribe evil motives to an action. To see a situation and to assume the worst about what might have caused it or brought it about. Now, contrast that with Abigail. When she goes out to see David, she assumes the best. That he is a man of honor, that there is no sin found in him, that God is with him, that God's going to take him. She assumes the absolute best about this man, and Nabal previously had assumed the absolute worst about him. Just a choice of bearing there.
Just going to make a comment. In our Christian life today, or anyone who wants to try and serve God, it was very plain that you have to forsake. If something's coming between you, if it's mother or father or sister or brother, you have to forsake them to do, and so she forsook her husband to do what she knew was God wanted.
And she's a great example to all of us if we get put in a life situation. We have the courage, the wisdom, understanding to act that way. Right?
I commend that young man, the servant of Nathan, who went to Abigail and explained to her that how they were treated by David,
yeah,
and protected by him.
Yeah.
That probably prompted her to do what she did.
Absolutely. And here's just a common servant with enough common sense to know, hey, something's got to be done. Something has to be said so something can be done, so this terrible thing can be avoided. And without his action, we don't get adequate action, and we don't stop David. So he really got the ball rolling.
Another example of selfishness and the consequence of selfishness.
Nabal's lifting himself up, hoarding everything in. I don't know if you made the connection already, but remember the rich fool in the New Testament? Who gets a great gain and says he's going to tear down his barns and build bigger. He's going to kick back and eat, drink, and be merry. And the Lord says, thou fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be that you thought were yours? It's the exact same thing happening in the Old Testament with Nabal, doing the same thing. Having been blessed, having trying to keep it in instead of giving it out as he's supposed to, and God just strikes him right there.
But even a little further than that, it's kind of like we see nowadays when wealthy people give away some of their money to kind of raise themselves up. It's not that they were really looking after the good of the people that they tried to help. It was that they were putting themselves on the table. He doesn't pay them, but then he gives it to the people that pay homage to
him. Right. It was about him. And maybe it was about him. Making him look better. She says, please forgive me for what I've done. Remember, she didn't do anything. This is her husband's sin, her husband's problem, and she's taking it on herself, and she's saying, let this be on my account what's happened. So talk about personal accountability. She says, put it on my shoulders, but by doing that, she saves countless lives, you know, hundreds probably of lives. And she gets the prince in the end.
David is called a man after God's own heart, and in this instance and in the case with Bathsheba, he seems that for all of his good judgment he bestows so many times to all of a sudden have this flight of passion where he just gets carried away and doesn't really think before he does anything. And he's like God in that God wanted to destroy the Israelites at Mount Sinai when they, you know, when they didn't listen to him. But then Moses went to him and stopped him. And Nathan, as soon as he talked to David about Bathsheba, he said, you're right. I should listen to this. And as soon as Abigail comes to David, he says, okay, you're right. He's very willing to listen to reason. And how important for us then to know that a little bit of wisdom, a little word of wisdom in the right place can stop a huge amount of trouble from happening.
Let it never be said of us, especially guys, let it never be said of us, you can't talk to him. You know, that we just will not listen. That was Nabal. Couldn't talk to him. Let us be more like David, who did value good counsel and did heed it. And he was passionate. And we can read from the Psalms how he gets worked up about things and how he goes off. But here he's ready to go off. May God send us, when we get passionate, when we get heated, someone who's got that word of wisdom, and Abigail, to come to us and say, to give us at least a good steer, and then can we heed it? That would be the right thing to do. What else? We've got just a couple of seconds here to wrap up. Carl?
We mentioned about her knowing so much about David and so forth, and one reason we might be puzzled a little bit about how she could know so much is because we live in such a large nation. But we find a lot of instances in the Bible where folks knew what was going on. If you could consider from here to Ocala being the long distance, the long way of that nation and not near as wide, you could see how word could travel even by foot.
Yeah.
And she could have heard. And we find that a lot of times where armies knew what was going on in other places because the nation really is small.
One of the commentaries that I read said that it wasn't unusual for folks who were interested to go and to hang around the prophets a little bit, too. You know how they had those little schools of the prophets? And it kind of wondered if maybe she didn't do that some, and she just didn't really seek out the scholars for what they knew, and maybe that was part of what she had done. But anyway, she did get that information somehow. He certainly did qualify as a male of his household, and he was the one that, his skin was on the line as well. Well, I hope this has been profitable to you. I hold up the woman Abigail as just a great model for us. And appreciate your help in this study.